The following is an evening darshan given by His Divine Grace Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, recorded on May 26, 1979 in Dallas.
Okay, that's what we were saying, that we would like to have a concept of class in our darshan.
So you're staying over here?
Yeah.
Very good. You have a place. Sarabhi Swami. Sarabhi Rabbi Kalyantam Swami. He is designed.
Working very hard to maintain their body. And the relationships which we try to establish within this world are also for the pleasure of this body. A person spends a lot of time enamored with this body. The body, nowadays, there are so many health clubs, health spas opened up to try and keep the body fit. But actually, we have to realize that at any moment, this body may pass away. Just like recently in Chicago yesterday, there was a big airline crash. The people who got on that plane, they never thought that the plane would crash. They thought certainly it's going to land all right. So, their death was very sudden. Our death may be slow. But the fact of the matter is that this body is very temporary. No one gives very much importance to a moment in time, just like the amount of time it takes to snap one's fingers. No one considers this moment to be very important. So we have to consider how important is this 60, 70, 80 years that we're going to live, or that the body is going to live. Just like at night, we go to sleep, and then we start to dream. And in our dream, we imagine so many things. I imagine that I am the king of Saudi Arabia, and that I own all the oil in the world. Or I imagine that I am the... so many things you may imagine. So, that dream may take hardly 2-3 minutes. It may even take an hour. But as soon as you wake up, then you realize that actually this was just a dream. There wasn't very much substance to it. And then you get into another identity, the normal identity which you have. But actually, the difference between the nighttime dream and the daytime dream, that is to say, now I think I'm a young man or a young woman, I think I'm a teacher, I think I'm a student, I think I'm black, I think I'm white, so many dreams that people have based upon this bodily conception. This is also a dream. The only difference is that this dream lasts a little longer than the dream at night. But just like you have to give up the illusion of your dream at night, so one day, sooner or later, you're going to have to give up this illusion. Just like this 274 people aboard the American airline plane that crashed, now they have to give up that illusion. One man was thinking he was the editor of Playboy. Is he still the editor of Playboy? Where is he now? What is the position that he is occupying now? So we are very much attached to these positions. Someone is attached to his youth. Someone is attached to his position. Someone is attached to his religion. Someone is attached to the clothes that he has. Someone is attached to his parents. Someone is attached to his pet dog. Someone is attached to eating spaghetti. People are attached to so many different things. For how long? At any moment, those attachments will completely be dismantled as soon as this body is destroyed. So, if you consider what is the basic motive which makes most people work, people want to be happy. So if it's not for happiness, then perhaps you're working to make someone else happy. But ultimately the goal is to be joyful, to be blissful, to put an end to suffering. But then try to consider, what is the cause of suffering? According to the Vedas, the Vedas are a very large body of philosophical literature meant to take us back to our original happy condition. According to them, this happiness and lamentation are called sochati kangshati, means hankering and lamentation. According to the Vedas, the reason why we become unhappy is because our unhappiness is begun in hankering or desire. Because I desire so many things, sooner or later these desires are going to cause us suffering. Just like, someone can tell me here, what is a desire you have of this body? Name some bodily desires, and I'll show you that they have to cause you suffering. Go ahead, anybody name?
Eating.
Okay, how much you want to eat? First of all, let us take eating. Yeah, you have to work very hard to eat. You have to get a job. And no one likes to work. If I could give you, it's like, George Henry, if I could give you $25,000 a year, will you go to work?
No.
That means you don't like to go to work. The only reason you're going to work is because if you don't, you won't eat. But you have to do something you don't like just to eat. Now, how much can you eat? Just like supposing you sit down to a restaurant, you go to a restaurant, so many nice foods are there. Now how many dinners can you eat in one sitting? One. At most 2 or 3 pounds of food and then you're filled. Although your tongue and your mind would like to consume a little bit of every preparation on the menu, right? Have you ever had that? You look at a menu and you have to, well, today I'll have to get this because I can only get one thing. I'd like to get this, this, and this, but I can't. So then, overeating. You could overeat. You could try and order 2 or 3 things, and then you'll suffer again. Now, as you develop all these tastes, they stay with you. Have you ever seen old people? What is one of the factors of old age? You know what? An old person eats like a baby. A baby can only eat pap. I know. I used to visit my friends. I would eat lunch at his house, and I used to watch his grandmother, and she used to eat this pap. It's like, it wasn't even porridge. It was some smooth kind of thing. She had no teeth and she would be gumming the food just like a little baby. I used to think it was just like a baby. So old people, they get reduced, but the desire is still there. They're sitting there watching the whole family eat very nicely and all they can eat is pap. They got no teeth. Now you consider eating. The cause of one's happiness, eating is certainly a joyous activity. But see how much difficulty surrounds this activity. There's a great deal of difficulty. The next thing is, what do you eat? Just like every time you eat, what are you eating? You're eating somebody else's body. So although you may be very happy, someone else has to suffer to give you some happiness. Just like a potato. You're eating the potato's body. You're eating a potato body. And the living entity that was in a potato, he had to give up his life to allow you to eat. So there's a thing called karma. Karma means for everything that you do, there has to be a reaction. So for every potato you eat, one day you will be eaten also. Why not? If that is the law of karma, karma works, then it should stand to reason. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So a life, what is that saying in the Bible? An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, and a potato for potato, or some kind of life to life. Every time there's an equal and opposite reaction. So your eating brings you happiness and brings suffering to others. And in this way, you analyze every single thing within this material world, and I can show you that the hankering for these things is the source of so much anxiety in the future, either immediate or else in the future. So hankering leads to lamentation. Either you will lament or someone else will lament for every desire that you have. This is the nature of material life. You may say, well, why is that? First of all, why do you take such a pessimist? We're not taking a pessimistic attitude. If you get me that newspaper, please, I'll show you. I'm not being a pessimist at all, because I can talk about nice things. In the garbage there. Newspapers are... It's not like asking for the Bhagavad Gita, which is on the bookshelf. Newspapers are kept in the garbage. Now, I'm going to show you the front page. I have not planned out this front page. But let's see all the news that's fit to print. Okay. 272 killed in jetliner crash. Chinese arranged an extortion charge. Spankalink goes to the chair in silence. Deputy White shot teenager in 1970. This is what is going on in this world. And people say that we're being pessimistic. But how can you be optimistic in reading this newspaper or in seeing factually what's going on? The only way is if you take the attitude of the ostrich that sticks its head in the ground when it's about to be jumped on by the tiger. The ostrich, they do that. They put their head into the sand, and then they think that there's no danger. Or the rabbit closes his eyes and goes like this. This is what a rabbit does. When it's this great fear, and a rabbit feels that it can't run away, he closes his eyes and starts to shake his head like that. So people are doing that, you see. They think, I'm never going to die. I've got my insurance policy. I've got my various different immunizations against different diseases. And so many things like, oh, there's just like I was reading here. There's a very good article. I'll show you. I'll show you a complete picture of what I'm talking about. This is very good. Hope I can find it. I didn't get very far in the news, but I did happen to see this article. Very interesting. Where is that? Oh, here. Something about, oh yeah, here it is. Families flee radiation. And listen to this line. About a dozen families left their homes Friday after state officials confirmed high-level radioactivity had been found in animal life near a former underground nuclear test site. Ron Lewis, an environmentalist, reported Thursday that tests had shown radioactivity in one frog at 1,000 times more than normal. There's a description about the animals that they found and how they looked. They say the animals did not resemble any way normal animals due to this radiation. Then it says, this is the point, then it says like this. Finch urged the evacuation after the University of Mississippi reported scientists had found radioactive and deformed toads, frogs, and a lizard above the Tatum Salt Dome. Oh, here it is. If there is any danger, this is a quote, if there is any danger We will immediately notify the people so their lives will be protected. And how can you protect them? This is a complete lie. How will they protect them? But everybody is thinking that at every moment there's always some solution. There's always some adjustment to the suffering of this material world. So the whole of life is simply one adjustment after another to try and be happy. Because actually this material world is a place of misery. According to Bhagavad Gita, from the highest planet down to the lowest, all are places of suffering. On other planets, there's also life. There are much better facilities for life, but people have to go through birth, death, disease, and old age. So, even in this planet, you may live as a very rich person or a very poor person, but still you have to suffer old age, disease, death. And radioactivity is coming, you see. Just like now, the world is armed to the teeth. Every year, they're spending $500 billion on nuclear warheads. $500 billion. If anyone here, supposing you spend every year $5,000 on something, how long will it be until you use the thing that you're spending all that money for? How long will it be until you use it? Now, supposing you're spending $500 billion year after year, do you think that they're never going to throw these bombs? So there is going to be fallout everywhere. Most of this planet is going to be completely destroyed. Practically, we have information that, for example, just in the state of California alone, they will annihilate nearly 20 million people out of the 22 million people. They already know where the places are going to, where the bombs are going to fall. They have plans where they will not notify you. They're going to notify all the military personnel first and evacuate the cities. Because if everybody's notified, they'll be huge. No one will be able to get out of the cities. So people think, oh, there's nothing to worry about. But there's so much to worry about. The plane can crash, the bombs can crash, your heart can fail. At any moment, death can come. Now, what is your preparation? You say that this is pessimistic. I say that this is objective. It's practical. At any moment, your life may end. So what precaution are you going to take? This is the point. This body is a very temporary situation. These people who lost their lives, where is this Playboy editor now? Who can say? No one. But according to Bhagavad Gita, he is not dead. Simply his body has been given up. The first basic teaching of the Bhagavad Gita is you're not your body. You're different than this body. Just like you're not your arm. Someone may have an arm amputated, but he's still there. Someone may have two arms amputated. They're still there. In Fiji, I saw one newspaper clipping. This was after John Wayne. They took out his stomach. So this newspaper clipping said, how to live without your organs. And it showed all of the organs in the body that they can take out and you can still be alive. So not only are you not your arms, your legs, you're not your stomach, you're not one of your lungs, you're not one kidney, and they can remove practically everything and still you'll be alive. Then who are you? According to Bhagavad Gita, you are the consciousness within. It is consciousness which is actually who you are. And this consciousness is coming from a source. That source is called the self or the soul. Just like sunshine is coming from a source, the sun planet. This light is coming from the light bulb. So consciousness, which spreads out all over the body, is coming from the self within. When this self or soul leaves the body, then there's death. So when these people died, you see, their bodies died, but they didn't die. The soul doesn't die. Just like with all of these disasters, the soul won't die. The soul goes on. Now, where does it go on? That is the problem. According to your activities in this lifetime, you prepare yourself for your next lifetime. So everybody has this responsibility. It's a very serious responsibility. That whatever you do, you're going to be held accountable for it. Therefore, you have to lead your life in a very intelligent way. If you want to be happy, if you want to be free from suffering, you have to give up the attempt to simply satisfy the millions of desires of this body. Bodily desires will never be satisfied. Like I say, an old man still has a desire to eat, even though he can't eat. He still has a desire for sex life, even though he can't have sex life. These desires don't go. They continue on and on, because you can't satisfy them. But there's a way to transcend these desires, and that is to contact the desire of the self. The desire of the self is a permanent desire, and it can be satisfied. that this is the purpose of our Krishna consciousness movement, to come into contact with the higher self within and to try and satisfy it fully. The process is very simple, by chanting Hare Krishna. Anybody that chants Hare Krishna for any amount of time will find that all of his material hankings will go away very quickly. And immediately he'll begin to experience no anxiety anymore. And then gradually he'll contact this self within and be able to experience a situation which is free from all kinds of suffering. So, if you have any questions about Krishna consciousness, this is a good time to ask. There's so many learned persons here.
You say that if you eat a potato, that it's sinful. But people here eat potatoes. And, I understand meat and fish.
No, killing a potato is also sinful. Not, it's maybe not as bad as killing some kind of an animal, but it's still sinful. After all, a potato has life. Do you accept that a potato has a soul? Is there anybody here that says that a potato doesn't have a soul? And let's get to this point first of all. What is a potato? Can anybody say? A lump of starch and water.
That's all it is. That's all I can see.
Well, what am I? How do you see that I'm much more than that? A potato has eyes also. No, the fact is that it is described that anything that goes through the six life symptoms has consciousness. That means birth, growth, reproduction, maintenance, dwindling, and death. Anything which exhibits these six functions has got a life within it. Just like a plant. It's growing. Cut it at the root, it dies. It definitely dies. There's one great scientist and has shown that plants have feelings. They're sensitive. They know where the sunshine is. What to speak of animals. If you say that a potato has no consciousness or no soul, then why not say that a monkey has no soul? Would you say that? You wouldn't know what to say. All right, I'll tell you something. I was just in Vrindavan, in India. It's a little town. And I saw one monkey. I was standing in the Lloyd Bazaar. And this monkey came. You know what he did? He came up with some clothing that he had stolen from somebody. And he traded it with the shopkeeper for some bananas. Now, can you say that he has no soul? He has a soul. His intelligence is practically, it may not be as advanced as a human being's intelligence, but to say that he has no soul or no intelligence, that's very foolish.
So somebody could be reincarnated in a potato.
So you've already been a potato. That's what there's a saying that you become like a vegetable. So there are people who are already becoming potatoes, practically in front of us. If you go into old age homes, you'll see people who will sit there like a stone, like a potato practically. They're vegetating, it's called. But they use that term, vegetating.
And they've got eyes.
Huh? Because
they've got eyes.
Yeah, that's all. They got two eyes and their eyes are, and they're not, some of them can't even see out of their eyes anymore.
So everything has a soul that goes through the system.
Exactly. Now, the point is, therefore, to take the life of a potato is killing just as much as killing an animal. Therefore, it's sinful. You haven't given anyone life, so what right do you have to take it? Therefore, you should starve. By this logic of what I'm saying, your next question should be, then we can't eat. Right? Unless you can live on air. There are yogis that live on air. There's a science, a yoga science, where you can exist just by breathing. Anyway, that's a very difficult yoga. We don't advise it. So how are you going to live? This is the question. How are you going to live? You have to find out someone who has the right to kill. Now, the only person who has the right to kill is someone who's given life. Well, who is that? Yes, God. So now the next point is, well then, does that mean that God will come and personally kill the different vegetables and cook them for us? No. On behalf of the Lord, we're allowed to take the life of those living entities which are set aside as our quota. And not only can we take the life, but if you just take it, then you're a killer. But you can prepare these vegetables, let's say, and then make them as an offering unto the Lord. And then the Lord will eat these things, and then the remnants of this food, which is known as the word in Sanskrit as prasad, or the mercy of the Lord, you can take as your meal. Therefore, that's how we can eat. There's no karma. There's no reaction for killing a vegetable, because it's being killed and offered to the Supreme Lord. Now you may say, now consider, if a potato gives up its life for being offered to God, then he makes spiritual advancement. The soul within that potato advances. Now what does it mean when I say it, he makes spiritual advancement? It means that the soul is transmigrating from one type of body to another. There are 8,400,000 species of life. Just like an inchworm goes from one leaf to another leaf. Crosses, crosses, then goes on to another leaf. Have you ever seen a little worm do that on a branch? Or a caterpillar, they call it. You've seen that? So similarly, as you, the soul, go out of one body, you go into another body. Evolution means that the soul goes from one type of body to a little bit of a higher form, to another form, to another form, finally comes to a human birth. So a potato who sacrifices his potato body for being eaten by the Lord, that living entity can skip over so many stages of the evolutionary ladder towards the point of becoming a human being. What is the importance of human life? In human life, you can begin to understand, who am I? Why am I here? Human life is advanced consciousness. A potato can't think, who am I? A potato can't become God conscious. A potato can eat. He eats through his roots. He can sleep in some way, resting. He can reproduce. And he can fight with the other potatoes for more sunshine or more water. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And every animal in the world does that, including all human beings. But there's one thing that a human being can do which no other living entity can do. A human being can say, who am I? Why am I here? What is this world? Where am I meant to be? How can I get back here? Human life is a life for inquiry into the nature of the truth. So therefore, it's a great advantage to get a human birth. After millions of different births, when you finally come to a human body, if you then simply use it for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, what's the difference between you and a potato? No difference. You're just doing a different type of eating. A potato eats through its roots, and you eat through with your mouth. Otherwise, there's no difference. And then you become very proud that not only am I eating through my mouth, but I'm going up on the 50th floor, and I'm eating in a restaurant that revolves. But the business of eating is the same. You're still just eating. Instead of sleeping like a potato sleeps standing up, you sleep laying down, and a dog sleeps under a car. But sleeping business is the same. A man thinks of 50 different ways to mate, and he creates so many nightclubs, and so much advertising, and so much clothing to attract the sex life. But the business is the same as any animal, mating. And fighting, there's so many big bombs, and an animal uses its claws or teeth. But fighting business is the same. Fighting is going on. But human beings can do something that no other living entity can do. A human being can become God conscious. A human being can become aware of his self, his higher self within, of his spiritual existence, which no animal can do. So therefore, every act that we perform should be an act of sacrifice. What does sacrifice mean? Sacrifice, sacred, make sacred. Sacrifice means to make something sacred. So you have to eat, then make it sacred. Instead of just eating for yourself, you cook your food with love and offer it to God. Just like in our kitchens, when we cook, you know we don't smell the food. You've tasted it. Is it very nice tasting? Would you be surprised to know that when they cook, you know they don't taste the food? And do you know they don't even smell the food? Then how does it come out so nice? That's called bhakti. It's devotion. It's out of love. Just like when a mother loves her child When she cooks, what is she thinking? That I'm cooking for myself or I'm cooking for my child? What does a mother think? No, no. Anybody who's a mother here can say, Divya Shakti, what does a mother think? See? You don't know because you're... You have to ask her. She has a child. She says that when she cooks, she loves her child, she cooks for her child. And after you finish cooking, do you eat first or do you first see that you're satisfied? First she sees her child is satisfied, then she'll eat. So if you say that you want to love God, then when you cook, cook for God and feed Him, and when He's filled up, then you eat. This is how to make cooking sacred. This is how to make your eating sacred. That's it. The same thing with anything that you have to do. Whatever it may be. Just like sex life. Sex life is a natural urge. That's it. So we don't say no sex life. But we say that everything that you do, make it sacred. So if someone wants to have sex life, let them do it as a service to God. Now what does that mean? That means that sex life means you can bring forth saintly children. If you know the art of having sex life in a sacred way, you can bring very advanced, saintly children into this world. Nowadays, this world is full of little demons. So these little nasty kids that run around and they create havoc. Someone was telling me that now, the latest statistics, that one out of... What is that statistic? Oh, yeah. 1,000 every day... 1,000 teachers are beaten by the students. 1,000 students are robbed daily in the United States by other students. These are some statistics of the nice little children, nice little Johnny, you know, your son. See, they're not so nice anymore. 1 out of 10 children attacks their parents with a deadly weapon in the United States. They just republished a report. Yeah, you'd be surprised. Some kind of a weapon, a knife or something. And this will increase. These statistics are going to increase. So we don't want children like that. We want saintly children. Now, how do you determine? You may say, well, who can say what a child's going to turn out? Just a question of what happens after he's born. Oh, no, it isn't. That's not a fact. The way you are is a result of what you were in your past lifetime. That's called karma. As you sow, so shall you reap. All of the desires and the actions which you perform now, they're going to bear on your next lifetime. Just like now, if you go to school, and you work very hard for 4 years in college, what do you get? A degree. And with that degree, you get a better job, right? And you get more money. That's the idea anyway. So as you work for it, you get a good result. Anything that you want, you got to work for, right? You have to do something for it, and then you get the result. But similarly, whatever you're doing now will be the result in your next lifetime. Your consciousness at the time of your death will determine the kind of body you're going to get in your next lifetime. That's why I say he was born with a gold spoon. What is it? A gold spoon? Silver spoon in his mouth. Someone gets born with a silver spoon in his mouth. It means he was born in a rich family, and someone else is born in poverty. Why? You think God is particular? Did he like somebody, doesn't like somebody else? Or is it just chance? No, it's because of the person's previous life's activities. So, in this way, everything has to be done sacredly. You have to have children with higher consciousness. That means the father and mother at the time of conception, if they're in very advanced spiritual consciousness, the child that they will be conceiving will be an advanced devotee of the Lord. This is human life. Human life is a life of responsibility, not to be led like a cat or a dog. But where is this education being given? In school, there are so many courses being given. Anatomy, circulatory system, respiratory system, digestive system. Where is the spiritual system being explained? Oh, that's just faith. Darwin has disproved the existence of the spiritual system. The only thing that Darwin has proved is that he comes from a monkey. That's the only thing that we accept that Darwin ever said, that he personally has descended from an ape. His brain indicates that. He has not disproved anything. There's no proof of evolution. No proof. The missing links are still missing. They have never found them yet. They have never yet detected two living entities giving birth to a different species. It has never yet been seen. Two roses may give birth to a rose of a slightly different color, but they never give birth to a tulip. That's never happened yet. This is all a bogus system. There was one man who published a book. He was a lawyer. So someone, while he was in the hospital, someone gave him a book on evolution about Darwin. And he read it and thought, this would never hold up in a court of law. So he wrote a book called Darwin Retried. And he found him guilty. Because he said, in a court of law, this is all speculation. There's no facts here. There's no connections. It's just word jugglery. So where is the education for spiritual life being given in our universities and higher schools of education? None at all. And therefore, what kind of persons are being produced? Sophisticated cats and dogs. Polished cats and dogs. People who call themselves humans, but who are actually only barking. Their talking is as valuable as the barking of a dog. They don't know who they are. You ask your teacher, just like if I ask you, who are you? Were you here that night when we asked that person? No, you came the next day. Mark, you were here, weren't you? We asked this guy who came here one night, who are you? What did he say? I'm Dave? What else did he say? What's your friend's name today? How you doing, Eugene? This Mark is a very popular man. I think you know all of Dallas. Okay, Eugene, we're going to ask you the $64,000 question. Now, you're on Radio KRSNA. You can tell us, who are you? Now, tell it to us. Can you speak a little louder, please? Okay. Speak a little louder, Eugene, please.
I'm Eugene Schmidt.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
I'm 17 years old. I'm from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
A little bit more, please.
Bikes and go to school.
What's your good name?
Craig.
Huh?
Craig.
Okay, Craig. You can tell us you're going to be on radio today. Please tell us who you are.
I'm Craig. Craig Ark. I'm a Unitarian. And I enjoy that.
Okay. Now, we're walking down the street, and here's a nice shave-headed young man. Sir, can you tell us who you are, please, young man?
My name is Vaisheshika Das.
I beg your pardon?
Vaisheshika Das.
What does that mean?
Vaisheshika Das means that I'm a servant of God.
Look. I mean, who are you anyway? I mean, what are you? Why do you look like that?
I am a spirit soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna.
Well, I mean, where do you live anyway?
Well, temporarily, I'm living in this body, which is considered to be a city of nine gates, which is a temporary dwelling place for the living entity or the soul.
What do you mean this body is a city of nine gates? And as far as I can see, the body is simply a, you know, man's body, woman's body. What are you talking about?
The body is compared to a city of nine gates because it has different openings in the body, which provide for different types of life functions and information for the living entity within the body. It's compared to a vehicle of the soul.
You mean just like a city has gates and the different things for the city, the maintenance of the people in the city comes through those gates? Well, who lives in the body?
There is the living entity who is dwelling within the heart of the body, who is supplying consciousness throughout the entire body. There's also the Supreme Soul, or the Paramatma.
Well, who are you? I mean, are you this body, or what are you?
No, I'm not this body.
Who are you?
I'm the soul within this body.
Well, what about this body? What is that?
This body is a vehicle for the soul.
Well, what do you mean, a vehicle?
Just as one gets into a car and drives to its destination, similarly the soul is within this body, and the self, and within this body, to reach a particular destination.
What destination?
The destination of this human body is to become self-realized, that one can transfer himself back to Godhead, which is our eternal home.
Can you go back to Godhead with the body you have now?
This body is temporary, therefore one must ultimately give up this body.
Then what do you do? No, what do you do? What is that, the soul? Does it have a form or anything?
The soul has a spiritual form.
Well, I don't see it now.
Well, there's so many things you cannot see. You cannot see because these eyes are limited. They are imperfect. And therefore, you must understand, even in the material sense, so much information by accepting from a higher authority. So similarly, one must accept the existence of the soul by the higher authority.
Well, that's just faith.
So you're accepting so many other things on faith.
No, I think
you're
about
accepting
it.
So many things on the basis of authority.
Well, yeah,
everything,
I mean, look at these authorities. I mean, scientists, they have degrees. I mean, they're respected by everyone. Everyone accepts them. I mean, who accepts your authority?
Everything that you've learned from the time that you're born simply comes from your particular authorities.
What do you
and
mean?
Your authorities throughout the ages have been proved to be imperfect. For instance, so many of your scientists, every year they change their information. In all
well, because they find out new things.
In your scientific textbooks, they have present one view of knowledge, and the next year it's changed. Just like one example is the Piltdown Man, who is supposed to be the link between the primitive man and modern man. It was found 40 years later, after he'd been accepted by all major scientists all over the world, that this was simply a fraud. So this was printed in all the major textbooks. In this way, scientists are conducting themselves.
Well, so err is human. Everybody makes mistakes.
Some don't make mistakes.
Well,
those who accept perfect authority do not make mistakes.
What perfect authority doesn't make? What is that perfect authority? Everybody makes mistakes. Do you know of any authority that doesn't make mistakes?
Those who follow the authority of God don't make mistakes.
Well, God may not make mistakes, but as soon as it comes to man, he has to make a mistake.
Yes, but ultimately, you may say that we are men, but if one understands that I'm not this body, that I'm actually spiritual, then the possibility of acting perfectly is possible.
Well, what are you, Hare Krishna? You're a Hare Krishna, aren't you?
Yeah.
What do you people do for a living? I mean, what kind of work do you do?
Our business is educating people in general about the science of God, which is the most important function in society.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sika. So you can see, Craig and Eugene, there's different ways to answer this question of who I am. That is a fact. There are different ways to answer it. Some may answer it according to their bodily identification. Just like if I say to you, who are you? You may say, I'm Mr. Yellow Shirt. Or he might say, I'm Mr. Blue Shirt. But actually, that's just a description of the clothes you're wearing. Similarly, if you just describe names and different things which relate to your body, it's a very external identification. But Mr. Vaisheshika here, he has given us an identity which is based on something deeper and more permanent than the changing form which surrounds the soul. He's trying to identify himself with the self within. And therefore, because he's found something that is permanent, the pleasure which he experiences is also permanent. Anybody that can only identify with their body or with the subtle body known as the mind, the happiness which you feel will be as temporary as the body and the mind. The thoughts which you have now, did you have them 10 years ago? No. And probably the thoughts will change again, because that's the mental body. The mental body is constantly changing. What about the gross body? The desires which you have now with your body, were they the same 15 years ago? And probably when you're 40 years older, again they'll change. But the self within, or the soul, is permanent. And it has a permanent aspiration. And that aspiration is to be eternal, full of bliss, and full of knowledge. That is the natural state of the soul.
We were talking earlier about the reason for suffering is because of the desire. Mm. And I was wondering how you can justify the desire itself to attain a higher transcendental spirituality. That itself is just another desire. Why is it suffering?
Because it's not the desire of the mind, and it's not the desire of the body. It's the desire of the soul. Just like I ran at you. I think you'd try and stop me. Okay, so that's all right. That means that you don't want to die, and you do care about living. And not only you care about living, but if there was an ant crawling on this pillow, and I put my finger in front of it, that ant would try to avoid my finger, because he doesn't want to die. Now, where is that desire to be eternal coming from? No, not instinct, from its nature as a soul. All right, instinct. I'll use the word instinct. I'll accept that. But it's the instinct, not of this body. Because the body has no experience of being eternal. Have you ever met any body that's eternal? Then where does that instinct come from? Yeah, that's the point. It comes from some higher thing within us. And that's the soul. But it's, look what it's the desire of. But look what it's, no. Suffering is from the desire of this body, which can't be fulfilled. But it's not from the desire of the soul.
Okay,
do you understand this point, first?
Yes, the soul is transcendental.
Yeah, the soul is transcendental. So the desires of the soul are very different than the desires of this body. The desires of the soul are your natural heritage, whereas the desires of this body are very temporary.
Okay, we were talking earlier about the potato, and it has other inverts in the higher body. I was wondering, back talking about suffering and stuff, would you say then that the soul of the potato is suffering because it was in the lower bodily form?
Yeah, the consciousness is a very suffering one.
I don't see how being a potato, I don't see how a potato is suffering.
But you don't have the experience in your memory of being a potato. Therefore, you can't say one way or the other.
And then, if a person doesn't know what is suffering, where's the incentive to change?
Whereas, therefore, it's my duty to explain to you that you're suffering. That's why I speak this way. I agree with you. That's why I'm saying that the whole world is full of people like the rabbits and ostriches who say it's okay, everything's okay. Just like they say, don't worry, even though these animals have 1,000 times more radioactivity than natural, it's okay. That's what the government does. That's what the authorities do. That's what this educational system does. But the Hare Krishnas, they do the exact opposite. They say, it's not all right, you are suffering, this place is a place of misery wherein repeated birth and death takes place, get out now. What is it, what's that name of that book?
Be Here Now.
Be Here Now. We say, don't be here now. We are publishing a book, Don't Be Here Now. You and the author of the book can remain here, and we got a better place to go to. You wait for the bombs, and we'll see you.
And here, and also, you talk about the soul is living eternally. The eternity is only felt moments at a time.
No, that's your conception of time. But you have to understand eternity means without beginning or end. So there's no question of moments at a time.
Okay.
No, listen. You're talking a lot, but just listen to what I'm saying. You said eternity is felt as moments of time. But that's contradictory, because in eternity there's no conception of time. Eternity is without time considerations. Eternity means without beginning and without end. So eternity means that you become happy forever and it never stops. Have you got such an experience in this lifetime? No. And there's nothing within this world that can ever give you that experience. Not so long as you're going on the external platform. But if you can go within and contact the self within, or the soul, you can come in contact with something which is eternal. The question is how to uncover the self within. That is known as yoga, self-realization. How to realize the self within? What process would you suggest? I mean, you could suggest something for all of us, as it appears that you are interested in these paths. What would you suggest as a method of self-realization? for all of us to follow.
You couldn't realize yourself intellectually, so it would have to be merely a spiritual feeling.
How would you do that? How would you get that spiritual feeling?
You have to relate. I mean, that's a cop-out answer. You can't say, I'm... You can't...
How? What is the process for becoming self-realized?
Eating dung.
Eating dung? How would that make yourself realize? So then you can try that path. No, I say that both of you can take up that path. No, in other words, my point is this. If you take that platform, then you should be willing to substantiate it and stand on it. In other words, you're saying that to eat dung is a method of becoming self-realized. But I say that not only is it not a method of becoming self-realized, but I don't even think it's a method of existing physically. I don't think that you could live by eating dung. And if you say that you can, then you should prove it. In order to become self-realized, you have to remain alive to be self-realized.
Isn't the goal to break out of the cycle of life?
But that takes some time. So in the meantime, what are you going to live on? And his point is that you can become self-realized by eating dung. Yes?
If you're not here now, where are you?
You are here now. I agree with you. You are here now. But the first point is, who are you? That is the point. When we ask this... Excuse me? Yes. That means that at this time, we find ourselves within this material world. But the question is, what is this material world? Let us consider what this material world is. According to the Vedic literature, this material world is like a prison house. It's like a prison house. Just like in a prison house, people who cannot abide by the law of the government, they're put into a prison. No, you'll still be in a prison. Therefore, we don't advocate the philosophy or the method of the rabbit, which is to close his eyes. In other words, we don't say that by, making believe that these problems are not here, that they're not here. We agree that there are many problems within this world. And we state that this material world is like a prison house. So the purpose is not to remain in the prison house. That is to say, the purpose is not to make your prison cell very nice and very beautiful, to bring your wife into the prison, to make a lot of babies in the prison, and to arrange a whole situation within this world where you begin to think, well, maybe I'm not in the prison. Maybe it is okay. The fact is that you're still in prison. Even if you're allowed to bring your wife there, if you're allowed to have children there, if you're allowed to have television there, still, you can't walk out of the prison freely. So in other words, no matter how much you adjust the situation of this world, there's still some basic miseries, namely birth, death, disease, and old age. So our point is this, that one should get out of this prison life of repeated cycle of birth and death, not be here now. We say that you have to get out of this prison house. And in order to do that, you have to recognize what the miseries of life are. And in order to do that, you have to know who you are. Because the nature of the soul... But the difference is this, that your consciousness is only conscious of this place, whereas my consciousness may not be conscious of this limited place. In other words, consciousness is something which is not limited by time or space. And consciousness is a function of the soul. So temporarily, my soul may be encased within this body. Okay? Just like your mind. With your mind, you can go to so many different places, right? You could close your eyes and just travel to so many places within your mind. So similarly, the soul is a more subtle form even than the mind. And with your soul, you can penetrate right through the coverings of this material world and actually exist in the spiritual world simultaneously with sitting here in this room. And then at the time of death, if your consciousness has been practiced in this way, become God conscious or spiritually conscious, your soul will immediately transport itself back to that spiritual abode where it came from. This is the goal of yoga. Yoga meditation doesn't mean some gymnastic feats, you know, standing on your head or all of these things. Those are just methods of controlling, gaining control of the body. But the actual purpose of yoga is to connect the soul with the Supreme Soul or God. It's the actual purpose of yoga is to take the soul or the self back to its original place in the spiritual world. So the method is by purifying the consciousness. The soul is conscious. So if your consciousness is just fixed on ordinary mundane things within this world, then if you die, you'll again take your birth in a body which will allow you to live in the same environment of consciousness. But if your soul has been purified so that you're fully God conscious, then at the time of death, you'll be transported back to the spiritual world where God is existing. Do you understand the point that we're making? Well, I tried to answer you. In other words, that you can simultaneously be here and not be here. I'm saying that the body, my body may be here, granted. But my consciousness can be somewhere else. I can practice developing a higher state of consciousness. Now, this is practical. You may say, well, that's an escapist policy. But it's not really. Because if you can actually develop God consciousness, then you can also learn to see everything in relationship with God. Therefore, we don't have to deny the use of a microphone, or deny the use of a harmonium, an instrument like this, or to deny the use of electricity. Because we can see how to use all of these things practically in the service of God. One who becomes actually God-conscious, he sees the harmony within this world in all objects, because he sees everything in relationship with God. So therefore, it's not an escapist policy, but it's a very positive outlook on life. You follow my point? We don't have to deny anything within this world as long as we see it in relationship with God. And not just see it in relationship with God, but then you have to use it in relationship with God. Sometimes people say, well, I see everything connected with God. But actually, you find that they're using everything for themselves. So things should be utilized in the service of God. Then you don't get attached to them. You get attached to God. Otherwise, you get attached to all these objects. And that leads you to further desires, and that leads you to take another birth again and again and again in this material world. But if you see everything in its useful form for serving God, then instead you become attached to God. And that's the meaning of God consciousness or self-realization. God is the supreme self. So we become self-realized by serving God. Do you follow that point? Do you have a further question?
Is the spiritual soul, the spiritual essence, is because it's within the body is a vehicle. Is this a changing thing, or is this something that in its eternity is always pretty much the same thing?
The soul is now lying in a dormant condition. It means like a sleeping condition. It's there, just like a person who's asleep is laying in bed. But because he's sleeping, he's not engaged in his normal waking condition of movement, etc. So right now, our consciousness, our dormant God consciousness, our dormant natural consciousness, is not awakened. So the soul is lying in a dormant stage. But by the process of awakening of the soul can be made to wake up and function in its actual waking condition. It doesn't change. Just like your soul is eternal, that means without change. But it's not right now functioning very much. It's lying dormant. Mostly the functions which you're performing are functions of this body and mind and intellect and false ego. What does the soul do, for example?
The soul is the essence of God and all.
The soul is, as it's described in Sanskrit, it's eternally the servant of God. So the natural activity of the soul is to engage in the service of God.